And I think like the honest answer is like the value of the business became such that like it really could provide a lot of security for our family. And it felt like, you know, if I was 23 and single and didn't have kids, like, all right, instead of going for this, like, I'm going to just keep on going and try to sell it for 3 times this or 5 times this, or just keep going. But knowing, you know, Amazon can be volatile. And so like I had all my eggs in that basket. So it just felt like, you know, the responsible thing to take some chips off the table and sell the business. But it was really hard.
Hi folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Dast. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
The kitchen is my domain. That was our deal.
I don't give a what the deal was. The deal is now changed. Either you stay or you go. It's up to you.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
So almost 1 year ago to the date of the recording of this episode of the podcast, I was on a car ride with Joe, from, where was it? It was from Dallas down to Houston.
Yep.
And then Houston back up to Dallas. We were meeting with a good friend of ours that lived in Houston. And while we were in that car ride, you had launched a new listing that went absolutely berserk. And I've referenced this. I think we've actually talked about this on the podcast a few times. I've referenced this deal because it was one of these outlier deals that seemed to check every single box. And the result was just a massive amount of requests for phone calls. And I believe 10 offers within a very short amount of time. And it's been a year since that launch. And obviously, you know, the deal closed, which we're super happy about. But now you finally get to have the seller on the podcast talking about all the things that he did right.
Yeah, and it's a great time because it's a year out, so he gets to look back. You know, and it, over the years of doing this podcast, people listening, they've heard us talk about the four pillars: risk, growth, transferability, and documentation. And, you know, someone might go, yeah, okay, whatever. The reality is that they matter. Paul Anderson sold his business 10 offers. He checked off every one of these pillars and the 6 little subtitles under each pillar. And then the fifth one, which I know, Mark, there's no fifth pillar. But the fifth one is the man or person, entrepreneur behind the business. Paul being a former CPA turned entrepreneur who outsourced his bookkeeping to a bookkeeper. Just a super likable guy, stay-at-home dad, buttoned up in so many different ways. End result, I had to clear his schedule. He basically had 3 conference calls with highly qualified buyers for 5 days in a row, was exhausted from it because each one was...
So you had 15 conference calls then.
15 conference calls.
Over the course, and you, I remember, again, we were in the car going back up to Dallas and you were on the phone pretty much constantly telling people, okay, let me see if I can arrange a time for you. So there was a lot more requests for conference calls on this deal.
Oh, a lot more requests. And we say we had 10 offers, but finally, you know, a few people dropped out because they just didn't want to compete because they knew what it was going to be. And the funny thing is, you know, people get concerned about that. And we always say right up front, look, don't get caught up in the hype of multiple offers. Don't go beyond your comfort level offer-wise. We want you to make an offer that works for you and hopefully will work for the seller as well, because we want it to go all the way from letter of intent through to due diligence. And that's exactly what we wound up with. And oddly enough, Paul did not choose, as we always say, they don't necessarily choose the highest price. He didn't do that. He picked the offer that was best for him. And I think it was somewhere $150,000 lower than the highest price. So we talk about a little bit of that process, what makes a good seller, a good buyer. And then we talk about what he's doing today, which is real interesting as well. So hopefully everybody will enjoy this podcast.
Absolutely.
Let's go do it.
Hey folks, Joe Valley here from the Quiet Light Podcast. And today I have an incredible exit client on the phone with me. It's Paul Anderson. We sold Paul's business, I think, when was it, Paul? Help me out.
It was March of last year, so a little under a year ago.
Spring of 2019, so a little under a year ago. So we're going to talk about Paul's exit. We're going to talk about what Paul went through when he built the business, sold the business, after he sold the business, and what he's doing now. So we're going to get the full picture. Paul, welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast.
Thanks, Joe. Good to be here. Good to talk to you.
So for the folks listening, why don't you give a little bit of background on your professional pedigree and your entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, sure. So I actually studied accounting and followed that path. I was kind of one of those people that, you know, never really knew what I wanted to do. Like some people, I think they just like, hey, I want to be a, you know, TV news reporter, or a journalist, and I never really had like that strong like thing tap me on the shoulder that said like, this is what you should do. So I took a pretty like safe, practical path, went into accounting, got my CPA. I spent about 10 years working in corporate America, doing accounting and finance jobs, and didn't really ever feel like that passion. And eventually it started to kind of wear me down. I got to the point where I had to, you know, think of something else to do and try to build my own little, you know, lifeboat to escape from that. Cause I just, something inside of me just didn't feel right anymore doing that. So that's kind of what led into starting a business. So that's in 2016, somewhere, I don't even remember where, I started hearing about Amazon FBA, and I kind of consumed everything I could about it. Like podcasts, there's this guy, Manny Coates, that does Helium 10. He had a great podcast back then, Amazing Seller. There's all sorts of good stuff online about the model. And that's kind of how it started. I started really small. We can get into it from there, but that was kind of the first step, kind of learning about it and seeing like, oh, I think I could do this.
So you learned about it from podcasts. You didn't pay for a course or anything like that. You were absorbing free information from experts in the space.
I never bought a single course. It was all podcasts, Facebook groups, you know, Reddit forums.
Love it.
And
I love
that
it.
Was just, I can tell you about the first launch, which was a total fail, but that was a huge, that was like my training course, like the very first launch, because I learned, you know.
Oh, failure's a great lesson. How much money did you pull together to launch the business? And were you working at that point in the CPA business?
Yep. Yep, I was still working. It was 2016. I put $5,000 in to do, most of it was an inventory buy.
Okay.
So I was on Alibaba like at night trying to find my suppliers, talking with China. And I put in probably about $5,000 to start on that first product.
Okay. And did you use, you just mentioned Helium 10. Did you use Helium 10 to help you find that first product?
Yeah. So it's funny. It like almost all the products I launched, I've kind of like encountered in the real world somewhere. And like the product that turned out to be my big business was I kind of got onto it from a discussion with my parents. We were just having a casual discussion like you would have many times a day, and they mentioned this particular thing. And I would always, in my iPhone, put down anything that seemed interesting. I would just like log it in there, you know, and then come back to it. So I had a list of 20, 30 things going, and I went back and started doing some research. Actually, I was using Jungle Scout back then, and I've switched over to Helium 10 for everything now.
Oh, they're both great products, both of them. I hear.
Yeah, both good products. Yeah.
Manny and Greg have both been on the podcast. Great guys.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So then I punched it in there and said like, oh, this looks like the numbers look good. And that's kind of how it started. But it really was that conversation and being like, I think if there's a lesson there, it's like being aware, like we have so many kind of filters and blinders on. Like if you really put yourself in a headspace of looking for opportunities, like you'd be surprised how many little things you read online or you hear about through friends or like, oh, this is really popular. There's just all sorts of those little things that pop up that could turn out to be, you know, big businesses.
So pay attention to your surroundings, the stuff that you use every day, emerging products and categories and niches, and try to pay attention to it and think, is there an opportunity? Did you use any tools to see if a lot of people were selling in that particular category, in that particular product?
I mean, Jungle Scout helps with that, but mainly you can just go on and kind of assess, like if page one, everyone's got 1,000 reviews and they're, you know, really well-known brands or something, that's probably going to be a tough place to break into. But
tough barrier. Okay.
Yeah. If
okay. So tell us about your first test. It was an epic fail.
Yeah. So I was really pumped and thought like, here it is. This is going to be like my ticket out of full-time work and this is going to be amazing. And it was actually an accessory. Have you ever heard of pour over coffee?
Yeah.
So that was kind of just bubbling up, seeming like, oh, this is really, you know, a trend.
Too much work. I'd never bought it, but go
ahead. A lot of work. Yeah. But there's a lot of people that are really into the craft, obviously, of coffee and want to have this little artisan experience. So I sourced these little wooden coffee stands that basically you use to make pour over coffee, right? And it was kind of a cool thing, but it turns out products made out of wood can crack and can break and have issues. And I was not an expert at sourcing at that point in time. So the long story short, a lot of the products ended up cracking and breaking. And then once you start getting all these one-star reviews and return, like my garage was like full all around cars of like returned inventory. And there wasn't that much demand. I think at the start I was thinking like, oh, you really got to niche down into this little tiny space and own that. And there just wasn't quite enough demand in that space either. So I kind of learned, you know, be a little smarter on sourcing, make sure look for ways that things can go wrong. Mm-hmm. Also something that's just so niche that like, even if you execute and everything's great, like you're going to be selling a couple units a day.
So how much money did you test and lose on that first product launch?
So there was about $5,000 in. I think I didn't take too bad a beat, but I think I lost about $1,000 on it,
which that's not bad.
Isn't bad, yeah.
But not enough to make you go away and say, okay, this didn't work. I'm done. I'm going to go back to the corporate world. You got a taste for it, and you said, okay, I just picked the wrong product.
Exactly. I mean, I was still in the corporate world, and like $5,000, you know, it felt like a lot of money at the time. So it wasn't like I was like, yeah, whatever, doesn't matter. It definitely, the stakes felt like real and high.
Yeah.
It definitely was like, I can see the power here on Amazon. It's just like finding the right thing to really get this thing spinning.
Okay. So you learned a lesson. You only lost 20% of your money, but you got an excellent education from it. Better than any course you could have ever purchased. You went out there, tried it, failed, learned, and didn't lose so much that you couldn't do it again. So you came up with another product niche and decided to go at it again?
Exactly, yeah. So then I was actually going over to, are you familiar with the Canton Fair, which is the big supplier?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I had a trip booked to go over there, and kind of in between going there.
Just out of curiosity, did you book it with a group or was it just you?
Just me and my wife went over.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Because I was just talking to Athena from China Magic, and they have a group of folks that go on a regular basis for those that are terrified to go alone. So you and your wife chose to book a flight to China and go to the Canton Fair awesome. Alone.
I loved it. It was really, really fun.
Wow. Okay.
It was an experience to go over there. I actually ended up finding my supplier on Alibaba like before I went.
Okay.
So I can't really say that like the trip necessarily like paid off in terms of like.
Did you connect with him in person when you got to the Canton Fair?
No, because it was still too early, and like he was pretty far away from the Canton Fair. Okay. But I think it helped me really see kind of like the culture of China and doing business with China and getting just a little savvier about like how things work. So it was a like great education for that, and just like a lot of fun to check it out. And I mean, the place is just massive, like multiple football fields, anything you'd want to ever source, like they've got it there. So that it was a super interesting spot. But anyway, back to your second question. So yeah, so I stumbled upon this other product and started kind of the wheels turning in 2016 to source it. Got it on, I think, in the fall of 2016. And like, I remember that Q4 for Amazon or e-commerce is like the prime time, right? And I remember just refreshing that seller app, you know, that Black Friday, Cyber Monday, like all through up until Christmas. And like, it was just mind blowing, like the sales that were coming in off this new product.
And I think, what was it like your first day that you got a sale? How many sales did you have all together? Do you remember?
Oh, I mean, it started slow. The first day was probably just two or three units. I mean, it was on such a momentum game. Like when you have no momentum, like it's hard to get momentum. But then once you get this momentum going and the wheel starts spinning, like it can blow your mind, like the amount of sales that can.
All right. So blow our mind within the first, the month or in that first quarter, like what did you wind up with on the biggest day, you know, within a couple of months of launching it in the Q4 of that,
I want to say maybe like a $8,000 sales day or something.
Wow.
Something big, like, and then you look at the profits from that, it's like, wow, I made more money like on this one day than like, and I had a pretty decent corporate. I'm like, this is crazy. Like the potential. Yeah. So the hooks kind of got in me right there. And then so 16 was kind of just getting off the ground. And then next year is when it really started, the ball really started to roll.
When you started to get the revenue in the fourth quarter of 2016, and sales started to come in, did you have, euphoria with the fact that you were getting that kind of revenue and making more money in one day than you made perhaps in a month in the corporate world, but did you also have the fear of, oh my God, I'm going to run out of inventory?
And I did.
And you did? Okay.
Yeah. And I did. Yeah. Inventory is like, you know, it's not something glamorous to talk about, and people, you don't really hear about it that much on podcasts or anything else, but it's like running a physical products company, doing an Amazon business. Like, the inventory planning is so difficult because your sales can change, you know, on a dime. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take your supplier 30 days generally to make something. You got another 30 days putting it on a, you know, a ship to get it over here. So you've got like these difficult variables to manage that can leave you stocked out, or you can end up with too much stock. So that's always a tough thing to manage.
Awesome. I don't think I've ever met an Amazon seller or an e-commerce business person that's been growing rapidly that's not run out of inventory at one point or another. All right, so you started with $5,000, did a test, failed. How long between the first failed test and the second product that took off? How many months was it?
That was about 3 months, I think.
About 3 months. Okay. And all the time you kept your day job, which is fantastic. So you've got some revenue, you've got some, you know, money in the account that's transferred to your business account. At what point did you order more inventory with, and did you just use that money, or did you sit down and talk as a family and say, okay, this is a winner, we need to take a home equity line of credit? How did you fund the rest of the inventory purchases?
It was all really funded with profits.
It was. Okay.
Yeah, it was. So,
and you didn't have to take any money out for living expenses because you had your day job. So that's
yeah. Perfect. If I wouldn't have had my day job, it would have made it, you know, much, much, much more difficult. But luckily I had like some steady income coming in from the day job. And then I was able to just take the profits, like reinvest them back in and just go from there.
Fast forwarding, you had an amazing 2017, an amazing 2018, strong year-over-year growth, like huge year-over-year growth. For those listening, Paul's business was listed again, spring of 2018. And it's that perfect situation, folks, where we talk about the four pillars of a sellable business, and that invisible fifth one, which is the person behind the business, and that's Paul. We have a 30-month-old Amazon business with an incredible brand that's growing rapidly year over year. It's the financials were set up impeccably. Paul is a CPA, but he did something incredible, which was what? You outsourced the books to an e-commerce bookkeeper. Brilliant. Brilliant, by the way. So those of you that are out there saying, oh, I can do this, I'm not going to pay a few hundred bucks to a bookkeeper. We've got a CPA here that chose to outsource to an e-commerce bookkeeper because he can do better things than bookkeeping with his time, like grow a multi-million dollar Amazon brand, which is exactly what you did. Your business checks so many boxes. It was SBA eligible. You were the owner behind the business, right? You built trust. People believed in you. During the recorded video interview, you're the first person, and I keep asking people to do it now, you're the first person that ever sat in front of the camera, reached down, picked up the product, and demonstrated the product. You showed the new packaging that you had just done. It was beautiful. And the end result was an overwhelming request to buy the business. Conference calls where you had to clear your schedule for a week. I said, Paul, cancel everything, right? We had to clear it. And we ended up with, I think, 3 calls with qualified buyers every day for 5 days. We wound up with 10 total offers. We wound up with, I think we were at the top one was something like $150,000 over asking price.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. And, you know, we say this all the time, and it's not always the offer that comes in with the highest number. It's the right fit more than anything else. We had, of the 10 offers, I think we had maybe 6 that were SBA and 4 that were cash. You ended up choosing a cash buyer, and not just because it was a cash buyer, but also the person behind the business. We did video interviews between the buyer and seller. How much did that matter, and how much of a difference did that make for you?
The interviews mattered a ton. I mean, that was really the deciding factor, because, I mean, when I went into the process, I just thought like, well, it's pretty simple, right? You take the highest number, like the highest bidder wins. But as you get into it and talk to different people, it's like a huge diverse set of backgrounds that people are coming through Quiet Light looking to buy, right? And some people, I felt like, wow, I could just hand this to them and they could run with it immediately and do like as good or better a job with this than I ever could. And others like, hey, I really like this person and like their heart's in the right place, but I feel like the transition might take a little bit longer. And then, you know, what if, you know, somewhere they drop the ball and things get sideways? Like, I don't, well, could that somehow come back to me? I don't even know if that's like a rational way to think about it, but like, if there was a lot of comfort, like feeling like, you know, this guy or these guys, they like really got it. They get it. They know what to do. They'll just hit the ground running from day one. So to me, that mattered a whole lot.
Yeah. And I think given the fact that we're in this, you know, remote world, where your buyers and sellers are all over the world, literally sometimes doing a video conference call for that initial call, breaks the ice. You're not reading the client interview anymore. You're not just talking to somebody on the phone. You can see the whites of their eyes. And anybody that wants to see Paul, we're recording this both on Zoom with video and audio, and it will be up on the YouTube page as well. He does not look like a buttoned up CPA today. And I was making fun of him when we first got on the call. You've always looked like that, but today, you know what? You're a successful exitpreneur, right? You got the sweatshirt on, a little stubble, working from home. I love it. All right. So I want to ask a couple of things just for the audience's purposes. Number one, back to running the business. What was the toughest challenge in running the business? Let's start with that. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'd say even at the start, this isn't even a tactical thing, but the hardest thing was just getting like the momentum going. Like starting the Amazon business is not like, hey, I'm trying to create an electric car and be Elon Musk here. But even me, like I had a lot of doubts at the start. Like, is this going to work? Am I going to lose all my money? All these doubts kind of creep into your head. So I remember really kind of like struggling to pull the trigger right away, thinking like, I just don't know. Like, is this supposed to be... Okay. This is my path, right? So I think that was really hard to overcome, and you just kind of keep going, put one foot in front of the other, and then once you get a little momentum, it just like breathes all this energy and life into you, and you just like feel so energized to just keep improving and add products and make your products better and make the packaging better. And but getting that first momentum can feel elusive and challenging. So I think that was like a big thing at the start.
And you failed, and then you stuck with it and you succeeded. Failed,
yeah. And I was kind of at an inflection point, like, should I keep going or is this just not meant to be? And then, you know, I kind of...
This may be a dumb question, but are you glad you kept going?
I'm very glad. It changed my life that I kept going. I mean, okay. I'd still be sitting at a desk in corporate America right now if I hadn't kept going. And like, we've got a 2-year-old son at home, like the physical time I'm able to spend with him, and then mentally my head is so much like the stress is away from me versus I was always stressed working in corporate America. So like, okay. It's been the biggest blessing ever to go out and do this. And it's changed my whole family's life.
Okay. So let me ask the question that, you know, all, you know, buyers ask, why did you sell the business?
Yeah, it was a tough decision to sell because I was having so much fun running it. And I think like the honest answer is like the value of the business became such that like it really could provide a lot of security for our family. And it felt like, you know, if I was 23 and single and didn't have kids, like, all right, instead of going for this, like I'm going to just keep on going and try to sell it for 3 times this or 5 times this or just keep going. But knowing, you know, Amazon can be volatile. And so like I had all my eggs in that basket. So it just felt like, you know, the responsible thing to take some chips off the table and sell the business. But it was really hard.
The responsible thing. I like that. The responsible thing. Your CPA background is coming out now. That's good.
Yeah, right.
All right. So what was the toughest part about going through the sales process and selling the business? What was the hardest part there?
Picking a buyer was really tough.
That's a good problem. That's a good problem to have.
Okay. I mean, just even knowing how to approach it, and you really helped a ton, Joe, in that process, kind of got it. When it's your first time through and you already have kind of these emotions, like you built this thing and now it's worth something, people want it, it's a weird feeling, and like how to value it and how to, you know, how to find the right fit and thinking about SBA versus cash. Like there's just a lot of things that are spinning through your head at that time. So
okay.
I think just like getting a clear head and like trying to identify like what the right fit is was the toughest part.
Okay. I think, you know, you again, exception rather than the rule, you had 10 offers. I think maybe one or two might have come in slightly under asking price, but the vast majority were above. I think in 2019, the average LO, the average offers that we had on any single listing was 2.5. So you were 5 times that amount, which is pretty exceptional. That goes to the brand that you built. It goes to the way that you set the business up with its own, you know, entity. You didn't commingle books. You're a CPA, but you hired a professional bookkeeper. You instilled so much confidence in buyers. They clearly came out of the woodworks to buy your business. All right. Toughest part was choosing a buyer. That's amazing. It's not what I would have guessed you would have said. Sometimes it's due diligence, but with you, it was choosing a buyer. All right. So now there's life after the sale. You were in the corporate world working 40, 50 hours a week, sometimes more in tax season. Then you're an entrepreneur working from home, spending time with your son. Now, what are you doing? You've sold the business 9 months ago. What are you doing with your time?
Yeah. So it's been nice, like, to have a little, you know, in life, usually you're just like chasing after the next thing. And I've had just the time to step back and think about, like, what do I want to do and what do I want my life to look like? So that's been like a real luxury. So going into, I'm building a website. It's called wealthfam.com. Wealthfam, WALTHFAM.com.
Okay. Fam like family. Okay.
Yep. Like family.
Okay.
It's brand new, but basically, like, so it sort of like combines my background and what I like to do. So it's all about like building wealth, becoming financially independent, starting and running online businesses, basically just how to be smarter with your money and use money to help kind of enable the life that you want to live, whether it's being with your kids or going on trips or, you know, whatever else. So it's a content site, which is a super interesting thing. Like I thought a lot about going back and doing another Amazon business, but I just didn't feel the same spark for like starting it. And it takes a lot of energy and mental fortitude to like take something from A to Z, and you got to really want it kind of every step of the way. Mm-hmm. So this just kind of really energized me. And there's been some great stories, like Ramon's story that you featured. Ramon, like, blew my mind.
His content site, yeah.
Potential that yeah. can happen in the content space. So like that, it was really exciting to me. Mm-hmm. On top of, I just like doing this stuff. So it feels like the right sort of fit. So
what kind of subjects are you going to cover on WealthFam?
So it's broken down a couple of categories, like making money, saving money, investing money, financial independence, and then some stuff like how money intersects with having a kid and, you know, married, buying a house. So I'm trying to make it like a modern personal finance site that people in their, you know, teens, 20s, 30s can find. Well, like, at least from my experience, like,
okay.
Education society, like our schools, and in general, like there's not a lot of like real training about.
There's none of it. Yeah.
Even less about like starting online businesses and like the potential kind of betting on yourself. And
like, seems like a great idea, because you're taking your educational experience along with your entrepreneurial experience and marrying them together with a content site, which is great. I love content sites. We work with SaaS content and FBA, and content is fantastic. I know that Scott Volker is really, really focused on helping people go beyond FBA and build content sites. And some of them having great success, and it's driving more traffic back to FBA and getting their business products sold. For those that aren't familiar with content site monetization, how do you plan to monetize the site?
So there's a couple traditional ways people do it. So like, first of all, you have to have traffic. I mean, without traffic coming to your site and eyeballs, like, it's tough to monetize. And getting traffic is really hard, and you're playing like this SEO game that it takes a long time to rank in Google. Then there's a couple primary ways. So first is affiliate links. Like, you could be, you know, selling a course or selling something on Amazon or selling, you know, yeah, the Amazon FBA thing is a really interesting thing for Amazon sellers to like marry their FBA business with content. Love that idea. I think that's really smart. There's, you know, brand sponsorships, other partnerships, but it's like advertising and affiliate income are kind of the two main plays for monetizing.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. And how's life at home? What do you do with your time? I mean, you don't have a job. You're starting a content site, which, you know, it might take a little bit of time. You got a baby.
It takes a lot of time.
The startup phase is always the hardest, isn't it?
I mean, the thing I underestimated about content was that, like, writing is really hard.
Yeah.
Writing, think like, oh, you know, I can write something about Amazon. Like, that's easy. I know this. It takes a lot of time to really do a good job clarifying your thoughts. But yeah, overall, I'm just trying to optimize my life for happiness and contentment. And like, I get that right now being with my son and my wife. So I spend a lot of time with my family. We do a lot of cool stuff together. And I'm really liking, I do some Amazon consulting because I still, you know, have an Amazon bug and I like to be involved in it. So I'm doing some of that for some local companies, which I love doing. And then this content thing really is exciting and fun. And I'm, you know, going to see where it can go. And
so you didn't make enough on the sale of your business to never work again, but enough to give you a pretty long runway, and you're enjoying your expertise in the Amazon space and doing some consulting while you build up another content business or a content business.
Yeah. That's a fair way to
sum it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. And like the goalposts kind of shift too, right? You know, like I'm not sure how in tune you are with the financial independence world, all the people that want to retire early and be financially independent.
Oh, yeah.
It's the 4% rule. Right. So like if your burn rate or you can live on 40 grand a year, once you've stacked up $1 million, like in theory, you can quote unquote retire.
Sure.
But as you think about education and college and healthcare and all these other things, like, you know, that number maybe shifts a little bit.
It gets blown out of the water. I have an 18-year-old and we're, you know, we're 14 days away from knowing what he's getting into, which is, you know, schools. Wow. And I'm rooting for the in-state schools, not going to lie to you. Rooting for the in-state.
Hey, I went to an in-state school and
nothing. Look how it turned out. Pretty damn good.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, listen, Paul, I always tell the story about you and your brand and the fact that fifth pillar makes a huge difference. It's the person behind the business that builds a great business with the next owner in mind. You kind of did that. I don't know if you did it intentionally or not, but you said, I'm going to build a great business. I'm going to put it all in a package that's going to help the new owner of the business do amazing things with it. And Matt, the new owner of the business, as you know, is doing amazing things with it. And it pays off. When you think about others and exactly what you did, it paid off for you, paid off for your family. And now hopefully through WealthFam, it's going to pay off for a lot of other visitors to your website as well. So people can start young and start smart and get on the right path financially. So listen, man, thanks for your time. I appreciate the business that you built because it allows me to tell the story of how the person behind the business makes a tremendous difference. So thank you and appreciate you coming on the podcast today.
You got it. Anytime. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.